Most of us are finishing up our annual Bible reading this week. Some of us didn't make it. Ryan, I think this thing is maybe
I
not...
I don't think the PA system's on at all.
Oh, that's the problem. Thank you. So we're about to start again. In January, we'll hand out another sheet of paper, and those of us who are interested will be checking off each day, 5 days a week, going through the entire Old Testament and New Testament. And I think it's a good practice. I think it's something very important for us to do. This evening I want to talk a little bit about why I think the Old Testament is so important. I wrote an article on it yesterday. The sermon's going to go in a completely different direction, but if you've ever wondered why it is that God has left us the Old Testament, then I would encourage you to read that article I wrote yesterday, because God is very clear about what he wants us to do with it. But I want to approach it from a little different perspective this evening. God has a tremendous desire to save us, but God is also well aware of all of the dangers we face. We have so many dangers. And like Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, if we, being evil, know how to give good gifts to our children, how much more your Heavenly Father who is in heaven? And so God has a tremendous desire to save us, to protect us, just like we did with our own children. When we were working with our children, we spent a lot of sleepless nights, I know I did, hoping and concerned about how am I going to get my kids through these formative years without having them get cut or get run over by a car or get hurt. How can I teach them? How can I guide them? How can I direct them? And so in their youth, that's basically what we do. We do it, though, in two different ways. And the reason I'm starting with this is because I think we'll all recognize that that's how we do it. But when we start realizing that that's how God does it, and that God does it mostly in the Old Testament, then I think that we'll begin to appreciate the value of the Old Testament maybe a lot more than we do. So the first thing that we do is we give them positive instructions. We tell them, this will save you, this will protect you, this will get you into your adult years. You remember how Paul put it? It's the first commandment with promise. If you honor your father and mother, your days will be long in the land. Well, we want to make sure that happens. So there's two things we do. First of all, we teach them and we train them, and we really hope that they'll accept our guidance. But secondly, if they won't accept our guidance, then we use discipline and correction to help them see the truth. And every parent who's following God's example is going to follow that. So in their youth, our big concerns are physical dangers. We don't want them to be hit by a car, so we take them to the side of the road. The car goes by, and we tell them, if you were out in the road right now, that car would have crushed you, and you would be in a lot of pain. Well, if they don't get it, then we might take them to the hospital, or we might take them to a cemetery and say, look, here's what could happen to you. This is how we do it with our children. And that's how God does it. Now, after the age of accountability, we're much more concerned about moral and physical dangers from evil companionship. So many lives cut short or diminished or ruined by drinking, drugs, gambling, fornication, and other illicit activities. I don't know about you, I prayed a lot about my children during those days because I was deeply concerned. The doors are everywhere. And the consequences are severe. We absolutely do not want our children learning the hard way when it comes to being killed in an alcohol-related accident, or to be destroyed by some drug that they used, or to have their life blighted because they have been thrown into prison and now they're a felon. So we have great concern about this. And once again, we do it one of two ways. We teach them directly, we discipline them, and we show them what happens if you fail. Now, God does the same thing. With Adam and Eve in the garden, we see that first he teaches them of every tree in the midst of the garden, every tree in the garden you can eat. But the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. So there's good, positive information, and hoping that that would be enough, that that should be enough If God says it, then that should be enough. And this is what God wants us to understand. However, he also shows them the terrible consequences. For in the day that you eat it, you shall surely die. You remember when Moses was up on the mountain and God says, go down now and tell them not to come up. And he said, they won't come up. You told them not to. Well, that wasn't quite enough, was it? And God knew if they looked, they were going to have to be put to death. And so the consequences were severe. And he didn't want to leave it for chance or to chance. This is the only instance where God simply left it to Adam and Eve to make that decision. And I've thought about it a lot through the years, why he didn't give them more than this, considering the terrible consequences. But God knew they had enough. And that's all that they needed. Now, both of these methods are used in Proverbs, and I've kind of put them into the different colors. You probably can't see them very well, but instruction is in green, and the others are in brown or orange or yellow or whatever color you want to call that. So as we read the first chapter of Proverbs, we learn this. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom. Now, wisdom is the positive instructions, the accepting of positive instructions, the ability to avoid all problems and all difficulties and all consequences because we listen. That's what wisdom is. And so in the Proverbs and in the whole Old Testament, as we'll see in a few moments, wisdom is one of the most important things that reading the scriptures will give to us. It will keep us protected and doing the right things. Instruction is the negative. Instruction is the punishment. It is the chastening. It is the negative example. So the Proverbs give us wisdom and instruction to discern the words of understanding, to receive instruction in wise dealing and righteousness and justice and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion, that the wise man may hear and increase in learning, and that the man of understanding may attain unto sound counsel. Now, that's what Scripture is for. That's what parents try to do. That's what all of us are seeking in our lives. If we're smart, if we are wise, then we want to listen and find out as much as we can so we don't have to learn the hard way. I hate learning the hard way. It is so much easier to go and find out exactly how to do something and have it done right the first time than it is to have it done wrong and have to learn from your mistake. And like I said, when your hand is bleeding or when you are looking at a project that you've destroyed because you didn't take the time to figure out how to do it, you understand the value of wisdom. Think of how much more true that is with spiritual things. Jesus talks about weeping, gnashing of teeth, anguish and agony of those people who did not learn the easy way. They didn't learn the easy way. They have to learn the hard way. They have to spend their eternity banished from God in agony and sorrow. I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want that to happen to my children. I don't want that to happen to anyone. And so this sermon is kind of designed for that. Verse 5, that the wise man may hear and increase in learning, that the man of understanding may attain unto sound counsels. To understand a proverb, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Now again, wisdom is the positive instruction God has given throughout the scriptures. And instruction is the negative, the punishment, the chastening, and the negative examples that we learn in the scriptures. So verse 8, my son, hear the instruction, this is discipline again, of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. Now, as I said a moment ago, wisdom is the easy and best way. Now, the Hebrew word, I won't bother trying to pronounce it for you. It doesn't really make any difference. You can see it there. It is the knowledge and ability to make the right choices at the opportune time. How many times have we said, if I only knew then what I know now? Well, you didn't have wisdom then. Wisdom would mean you do know then what you need to know to make the best possible decision. Now, how does God give that to us? Well, we can pray for it. But praying for it is not going to give us very much if we don't have the essence of what we need in order for the prayers to be able to work off of something. If we don't have the raw materials, God can't give us wisdom. The raw materials are in the Scriptures. So this particular word is the ability to make the right choice at the opportune time. The consistency of making the right choice is an indication of maturity and development. Now, that's what God is talking about. This is the word wisdom here. Let's read it. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom, who finds the ability to make the right choices at the best possible time. Now, those of us who were converted and became Christians in our youth, we look back on that as such a good decision, such a wise decision that has changed the course of our lives, that has brought good people into our lives, and that has brought wisdom and knowledge. And of course, the later we waited, the less opportunities we have. How blessed is the man who finds the ability to make the right choices at the opportune time in the physical realm, in the realm of relationships, and in the realm of serving our God and being blessed by Him. Notice what he goes on to say. Its profit is better than the profit of silver, and its gain than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels. Nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. You know, there's nothing more agonizing than to look back on your life and realize that if I had just made this decision then. You'll never have peace if that's what's haunting you. And of course, we have to forgive ourselves. We have to ask for God's forgiveness. But the point is, it would be much better if we made the proper decisions at the right time in regard to our children, in regard to our relationship with the Lord, in regard to our growing and developing. So he goes on to say, her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. Now, as I said a moment ago, that's what the Old Testament is for now. We see this in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, God gives us the wisdom of following and making the right decisions, like Abel did, like Noah did, like Abraham did, like Isaac did, like Moses' parents did. And we'll go on, and we'll talk about the fact that the Old Testament is filled with nuggets of wisdom by looking at the lives of Old Testament Bible characters who were successful and learning how they did it, and then understanding there are a great cloud of witnesses. And so we should have, you know, when we read I have more understanding than the aged, the psalmist wrote. I have more knowledge than my teachers. Why? Because your scriptures are my meditation. So this is the value of wisdom. The right decision at the opportune time. When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you. And understanding will keep you. That's what God wants. He wants that in the spiritual realm. That's why Peter said, be sober, be watchful. Your devil, the adversary, is searching whom he may devour. And what we have to understand is that the Old Testament scriptures are so valuable. When Paul told Timothy that you have known the sacred writings from a youth and that all scripture is profitable for doctrine, for instruction, for correction in righteousness, that the man of God might be complete. That's what the Old Testament scriptures are for. If we don't know them, if we're not reading them, if we're not making the right applications, we are diminishing our ability to make the right decisions at the opportune time. You know, one of the things that has always amazed me is the difference in outlook in the Lord's Church, in the Church of Christ, and in all other denominations, because they're not looking at the Old Testament scriptures, they're not making those applications, and they're just doing whatever they want with the New Testament. They don't have any wisdom. Wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Making the right decision at the opportune time. It just avoids so many consequences, so many problems that can't be fixed. Once the opportune time passes, and we didn't make the right decision, all we can do is regret it for the rest of our lives. And we all have regrets like that, but God would like to minimize them and certainly make them not the kind of regrets that we might carry into eternity. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. So that's what God reveals to us. It's one of the main purposes of the Old Testament. We'll talk about that just a little bit later. I'm just going to read the bottom one there. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget, nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And all you're getting, get understanding. You're not going to get this while you're watching television, while you're playing video games, while we're involved in activities that are secular and certainly enjoyable, but they won't give us this benefit. Reading those scriptures year after year after year, we won't even know until the judgment day how important that was. But we've watched people. You know, one of the things that I've learned from Nadab and Abihu, from Cain and Abel, from David and Uzzah, from King Saul, is that if you don't make the right decisions at the opportune time, you can have eternal regrets. And the same exact principles are true today. Now, instruction is a little bit different. It's discipline. But more, it teaches how to live correctly in the fear of the Lord, so that the wise man learns his lesson before the temptation and the tempting. Now, this is what I call the negative consequences, the negative use of examples. I used to do this with my kids. If there was a terrible crash on the front page of the paper, drunk driver, I call the kids in. Hey, you see what can happen? You see what can happen? That's instruction. Wisdom would be, don't ever do this and your life will be good. Instruction is, if you do this, this is the probable, possible outcome. And so, this is the word for negative learning. And it's put next to wisdom. Wisdom, positive acceptance of truth and following it. Instruction, negative impacts if you don't follow it. And hopefully, those negative impacts are going to be our looking at other people and the mistakes they've made and not having to look back on our life in our 60s and 70s and say how stupid I was, how foolish I was, how I wasted my life. And of course, then we can become the instruction to other people, and that's often what we do. We sit down with young people and we say, look, don't make the same mistakes I did. I chose to do this, I chose to do this, and the outcome is terrible. And so we become an example of instruction, but I'd rather that didn't have to happen. Now, in the wilderness, this word is used. I want you to think carefully about this, because this is what Paul does in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 or chapter 10. He uses these exact same examples, and he uses the exact same applications, and that is, you better learn what happened, those people who came out of the wilderness, so you don't fall like they did. So here's Moses. We're right on the doorstep of the Promised Land. He's about to die. Mount Pisgah is somewhere near, and he's very close to leaving. He's preaching these final lessons to the children of Israel, and he's reminding them of something. You shall therefore love the Lord your God and always keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments. What a pertinent passage for today. As we look out at the realm of religion, we realize how few people are doing this. And know this day that I'm not speaking with your sons who have not known or have not seen the discipline of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his outstretched arm. So Moses is taking the last 40 years, and he's saying, I want you to go back over and look at all of the terrible things that have happened, all of the things that God has had to do to teach us to keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments. So he used the wilderness as this instruction. The goal in verse 1, to love God, always keep his charge, statutes, ordinances, and commandments. To accomplish this, he reminds them of the discipline. Just exactly like Paul did, and we'll come to this in just a few moments. Let's look at what he says. His miracles and his acts, which he did in the midst of Egypt unto Pharaoh. That's the 10 plagues. You remember those 10 plagues? Do you remember how God instructed and disciplined those people in Egypt? Can we make an application there? Do we want that to happen to us? Verse 4. What he did unto the army of Egypt when the water covered them up. There's instruction. If you want to rebel against the Lord, that's what's going to happen. Then he goes on to say in verse 5, what he did to you in the wilderness until you came to this place. What he did to Dathan and Abiram, how the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their households. Now, Paul's going to go in a little bit more further. Don't murmur like they did. Don't commit fornication like they did. Don't tempt the Lord your God like they did. And he'll list several other things. Why? Because we need that discipline. If we don't want to have to endure it ourselves, we have to learn what happened to other people. Like I say, that's learning the easy way. The best way is to learn it by just accepting it. God said it, I believe it, that's going to be the end of it, I'm going to do it. But sometimes people aren't interested in that, so there needs to be a next step. And that's this, what we would call instructive discipline. Discipline that God has done to others that we apply, we say to ourselves, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fall into the same area that they did. Now, I have to keep something in mind. In 100 years from now, our lives are going to be just like theirs. And we're going to look back on how we lived our lives. We don't want to live it like they did. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father, the son, in whom he delights. Now that's found in Proverbs 3, but it's quoted in Hebrews chapter 11. This is the passage, and we'll get to this also. We're gonna kind of sum up and package all of this up at the end. But the basic point that I want to make is that God has recorded all of these things in the Old Testament. Just like he reminded the children of Israel, well, they're still there. And in Hebrews chapter 3 and 4, and in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he goes back and he points to them and he says, you remember what happened to them? They have the gospel preached to them just like you, and it didn't profit them. Don't think that you can't fall like they did. That's instruction. That's not wisdom. That's instruction. That's using negative things to warn people. If you're not going to learn the easy way, here's the next step. If you're not going to just accept what God says, here's the next step. The commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his own steps. That's the way of life. And learning about these things, being able to go over in our minds and realize, okay, I'm about to make a decision. Let's see. Let's go back over in my mind. Okay, you remember? That's exactly what this guy, he was in the same situation as me right now. And here's what he did, and this is how it turned out. I'm not going to do it that way. That's what we have to learn. We can learn that from Balaam. Balaam was God's prophet. And yet, through greed and through folly, he lost it all. The easy way, learning it from others. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. I don't need to get beaten. When I see my sister get beaten or my brother get beaten, I say to myself, you know, I don't think I want to do that because I don't want to be in that situation. Well, that's what this man is saying, except he's not talking about a beating. He's talking about learning from the scriptures and learning from the bad examples of other people. So the wisdom is learning from the successes of others and avoiding the need for chastening. I don't want that. I don't want to have God reaching into my life. Now, that's the final step. If I won't learn wisdom and I won't learn the instruction found in the Old Testament, that's when Hebrews 12 kicks in. The Lord will chasten us as seems good to Him. If we won't learn, He'll bring in problems. He's not going to let us go. He's going to try to help us. So, first we learn from the successes of others. The scriptures, the New Testament scriptures, referring back to the Old Testament, mention many, many different Bible characters that we can learn this from. Don't need to fail. Through Abel, he's still speaking. I can learn from Abel. Though he's dead, he's still speaking. What can I learn from him? I can learn how to worship the Lord. I can learn how to worship the Lord in spirit and in truth. I can learn how to worship the Lord as a genuine worshiper if I'll just listen to Abel and reject the negative consequences of what happened to Cain. Cain and Abel are classic, and they're used over and over again. Hebrews chapter 11, 1 John chapter 3, they are placed there in Luke and in Matthew. He puts them in there to help us understand about this. Learning from the failures of others and avoiding the need for personal chastening, and I probably should have gone a little bit further, or to avoid failure ourselves. Refusing to learn from others? Well, that's when the Lord sends directly to us. And you see that over and over throughout the Kings, throughout the Judges, throughout the between the Testament. What do you see over and over again? When God sees His people need to be chastened, He sends it. I've got a bad feeling that that's what we're on the cusp of right now. We need chastening. It isn't the wicked. God isn't chastening a nation for the wicked. He's chastening a nation because of the decisions of the righteous, because He sees the righteous wavering, because He sees the righteous being caught up, like Jesus said, in the cares of the world and the desires of other things. If we don't want to bring that on ourselves, then before it's too late, we need to learn it. So that's really the purpose of the Old Testament. All the positive examples in the Old Testament are written for our learning and for our imitation. That's what he said. We are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Well, where are they? I don't see them. Well, they're throughout the Old Testament. But if we don't learn it, if we don't read it, we're not going to get any example. We're not going to learn the wisdom. That's the way to learn. The way to learn is at the proper moment, before we go through the situation, we know exactly what we should do because we've seen how somebody else did it, and we get through it, and when we're done. That's what I like about these videos about how to work on a car. You just watch what they did, and then you go out and do it yourself, and when you're done, you say, wow, I'm pretty smart. Well, no, you're not very smart. You just had somebody to follow. And having an example to follow is a tremendous benefit. Well, God has done the same thing. That's what the Old Testament has been left for us for. One of the purposes is this great cloud of witnesses. So we'll lay aside every weight. So we'll lay aside the sin which so easily ensnares us. And so that we'll run our race with endurance, just like Abel, just like Enoch, just like Noah, just like Abraham. Matter of fact, when we start looking at all of the people that he lists here, and I had to make it pretty small. Well, I guess you can see them pretty well. You can see that these are the examples that are in Hebrews chapter 11. This is just a small tithe of the great cloud of witnesses. As I say, we've got Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Jacob, and Joseph. That's the book of Genesis. Those are the Bible characters in the book of Genesis. Then we have Amram and Jochebed, the mother and father of Moses, who saw he was a goodly child. Then we have Moses. Then we have Joshua and Israel. We have Rahab. We have Gideon. We have Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, the prophets, Daniel. You say, how do you get Daniel out of that? Well, he stopped the mouth of a lion. Well, what about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Well, they stopped the power of fire. And then multitudes of people who went about in sheepskins and in goatskins, afflicted, ill-treated, of whom the world was not worthy. If we find ourselves in that situation in the next few years, where we find ourselves in sheepskins and goatskins, afflicted and ill-treated, We won't say, I don't know what to do. We know exactly what to do. It's already been done. We just have to do what they did. They kept their faith. So we have this great cloud of witnesses ready to testify. But they can't testify if we don't open the book. And there's not enough hours in preaching and in teaching throughout the year to even get more than what? Maybe what do we cover every year? About that much? We don't cover a lot. I preach, what, 52 times in the morning, 52 times in the evening. And then we cover, on Wednesday night and Sunday morning, we cover two different books. That's it. You're not going to get these witnesses by that. We have to make a choice. Do I want to get through this life? Do I want to make good choices at the right time? The next time a terrible battle comes along in the church, do I want to have examples so that I know how to make the next step? So that I know what direction to go? Brethren, the consequences are just too severe to leave this to chance. We don't know what's coming. But we do know that God has given us the wisdom to get through it. And that's what this first part is, wisdom. I can follow Abel. I can follow Moses. Moses who chose to serve ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And as I read through his life and I understand better and better the choices that he made, it encourages us. It strengthens us. And so the benefits of these great cloud of witnesses are incalculable. Well, the purpose of the Old Testament is also instruction. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now that's like me getting the picture of the accident and bringing my kids in, or as I was an ambulance driver and went out on some of the most horrific things that you could imagine, I'd sit them down sometimes and I'd say, look, here was an 18-year-old kid. Matter of fact, I took him once to look at the car. The little Datsun, one of those 240Zs or whatever they were. And the engine was in the trunk and the transmission was sticking out with the drive shaft. That guy had been thrown from that car. He was going about 90 miles an hour when he hit a tree about as big as this. It was a huge tree. And I use that. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. That guy's body was on the ground, all torn to pieces, thrown out of that car. Don't drink and drive. You think that doesn't have any impact? Of course it has an impact, because they saw the car. I remember one time in high school, when we were in Orville, they brought one of those cars and they put it out on the front. They said, don't drink and drive. And I thought, man, that's a great instruction. Well, that's what Paul's doing here. Except it's not an accident. It's their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now, the Hebrew writer makes it even clearer. He says they had the same gospel preached to them. This was preached to us. Read it. It's in Hebrews 3 and 4. Just sit down and read it. You'll see that Paul here and the Hebrew writer there says what happened to them when they left Egypt is exactly what happens to us when we leave the world. Well, what exactly are you talking about, Paul? Well, these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as some of them also lusted. You remember when they lusted exceedingly? Because they were sick and tired of that manna. God sent the fiery serpents among them to bite them. Do not become idolaters as were some of them. This is talking about what happened when Moses was on Mount Sinai. People sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Well, we know what happened next. Moses came down from the mountain, broke the Ten Commandments, called the Levites to go out and kill about, what, 20, 25,000 people. Verse 8, nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. What's he talking about here? Balaam. Balaam, who told Balak, look, if you get your beautiful women and you send them to Israel and you entice them, you will get God to curse them. Well, they did. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. Now, admonition is about the same Greek word as instruction is in the Old Testament Hebrew word. They were written for our admonition. They were written for our instruction. They were written for our chastening. If we learn from that, we don't have to go to the next step, which the Hebrew writer will talk about. So, if all else fails, you have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. There's that word. Nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. So, that's God's last step. Verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, looks like I lost a verse there. That's all right. Furthermore, we had human fathers who corrected us. There's that same word. We paid them respect. Shall we not much rather be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Do you know what he's talking about here? He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. He's talking about the persecutions that are going to be coming. As I mentioned Wednesday night, Hebrews and 1 Peter were written about the same time, about the same circumstances. The fiery trial is coming. So we can learn by wisdom in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, which makes the applications for us. We can learn from instruction, which are the negative outcomes that we read throughout the Scriptures. Or we can learn by God saying, okay, I've got to wake Alan up. I think we're going to have a financial problem for Alan. I don't know whether God does that directly. I think he probably does. I think he probably does. That's basically what's being said here, but I wouldn't argue with you about it. I certainly am not going to say the next time something bad happens to me, God's doing this, but I know he's doing it, and I'm glad he's doing it. Because if wisdom won't help me, and the negative examples of other people won't help me, and I'm on a collision course with eternal destruction, I hope God will chasten. I hope he will punish. I hope he will take things away and bring upon us these kinds of things. So what are we going to choose? We can read our Old Testaments. We can look at all the wonderful, good examples of people that God has put there. We can learn from it. We can make the right decisions at the opportune time. We can look back on our lives with great joy and happiness, not pride, not smugness, but just wonderful amazement that God helped us so much with all of these good examples. We can also learn from chastening, either by taking instruction from others who fell in order that we might succeed, or by refusing to take instruction, the Lord will still send chastening so we can receive. And then sadly, the last thing, if we refuse that, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So our study of the Old Testament, yes, we're going to put out new lists. I was thinking about that yesterday. I just kind of sighed and I said, wow, I just finished and now I've got to start all over again. I'm just now finishing up the last few pages, and then next week, here I'll be right back here again. And I just kind of thought, you know, do I really want to do that this year? And like I say, this lesson just kind of started formulating. And yeah, I can't wait to study it. Why? because I'm going to get more wisdom next year than I got this year. I'm going to get more chastening and more instruction, and I'm going to learn, and hopefully whatever terrible, foolish decisions that I might have made, I won't make them. I'll never have to wonder because I didn't do it. And that's the benefit of reading our Bibles day after day. And I would really encourage all of us that now that we know this, as we're reading our Bible, let's start looking for these things. Let's start looking for the instruction. Let's start looking for the wisdom. Let's start looking for the chastening. Because whom the Lord loves, he chastens. First in the Scriptures, secondly in our personal lives. And so as we now prepare to sing the song of encouragement this evening, let's open up our song books to number 344. We are rushing headlong into eternity. Every day brings us one step closer. And as Hebrews chapter 9 puts it so succinctly, it is appointed unto man once to die. After that is the judgment. For we must all stand before the judgment seat of Christ to receive the things done in the body, whether they be good or whether they be evil. I want them to be good, and I know you do too. And that's what this lesson is designed for, to help us find those things that should be standing out like a sore thumb, whatever that means. But that's an idiom we have, that it stands out, that it's something you can see. That's what we have to do with these things. If you can see something tonight you haven't seen before, and you need to make your life right with God, don't wait until he has to chasten. Take the opportunity to make the right decision at the opportune time so that it doesn't have to be made for you at the worst possible time. If we can help you in any way, would you please make it known while we together stand and sing?